everyone. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is, what day is today? The 20th of February. It's about 10 after 9. And we're going to listen to Director of Management and Budget today talk about the amendments to the operating budget, the supplemental, and the capital budget. And Pat, if you want to come forward. And today, once again, you're here without the crew, or the multitudes. So we'll just probably stick to a more 30,000-foot level, though there are a few questions that we're going to want to ask on the most recent amendments. But before we do, present at the table are Senators Machicki, Bishop, Dunleavy, McKinnon, Hoffman, and Olson, and myself, Senator Kelly. And if there's any questions or comments the committee wants to make before we dig into this, now's a good time. Did you just raise your hand? No. Senator Bishop? No. You're good. All right. So, Ms. Pitney, you have the floor.
For the record, my name is Pat Pitney.
Can I interrupt you just so everyone's good about the sheets you're going to be coming off of, we're working off of? Okay. Go ahead.
One more time. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm with the Office of Management and Budget. So we'll start with the operating budget, and I'm working off of the spreadsheets that look like this. Yours might be smaller. Starting with line one, the first line one, two, and three are together. I guess one of the principles with the operating budgets was as much as possible keep with the governor's overall targets. So you'll see additions and reductions tied together. So line one, two, and three is to restore the funding for the Alaska Native Arts Marketing, which was the only program eliminated out of that particular component. There's a reduction, additional reduction to tourism marketing and to the Alaska seafood marketing. The total for the Alaska Native Arts Marketing is $300,000. The reduction to the two other programs is $150,000 each.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Chickie.
We have a tendency to start these meetings without making sure everyone's on the same page, literally.
It's over here. So.
What page should we be on?
It says page 104. And
okay.
It was...
That's actually the page I'm on.
Okay. Try to stop there.
Yeah. I'm...
Take it easy. We're back on the record. Did you have a question beyond just kind of placement?
Okay. I do. Just a quick one here on line one. What? How much is of this $300,000 appropriation is for purchasing art directly? We have a long description there, Ms. Pitney. It's hard to determine which is because of survival mode and which is for actually purchasing art.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact proportion. It's both. Helping rural artists market their art from their own community, and then moving that art into Anchorage and selling it out of a particular retail area. The plan with this particular function is that it would move off to privatization. There was a mistaken impression that it could be done this year. That's why it's restored with the expectation it's going to move away from state subsidy in the future.
And Mr. Chairman, just a comment, and I'm not going to ask you a judgment call on this, but at in a year when we're $3.8 billion overextended, I'm a huge supporter of Native Arts. Just, it's one of those evaluations we'll have to make on whether it reaches that top priority going forward. Just seems like there may be private options for some of these categories, particularly this one, but thank you.
Go ahead, Pat.
Okay. So on line four, after reconsideration, that we determined that completely closing down the community jail program probably isn't in the best interest of the state. This restores $7 million of the previous roughly $10.6 million that it was last year. It restores it roughly back to the 2011 level of pricing for the jails program. And this would allow time for renegotiation of specific community contracts, but also look for any impact on Department of Public Service, public safety, and continue to look for the more streamlined way of dealing with our criminal justice system.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think many of these programs, such as the community jails, go hand in hand with, you know, the troopers and the judicial system. If you eliminate one, how do you get the prisoners to those rural communities where jails are, and what are those judges going to do? So they have to be looked at together as a package in delivering the justice system in rural Alaska. And I know it's expensive, and somehow that has to be looked at, and is there a more economical way to do it in these times? And I think that's what the administration needs to look at, all of them together, and not just go in and reduce them. I believe that what was originally proposed was a cost shift from from this department over to public safety, because those prisoners would have to go back and forth between a facility that's in Anchorage or Bethel or Fairbanks and out to those communities. So this may initially look like a cost savings measure, but it is just a cost transfer.
Thank you, Sir Hoffman. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I look at the reinstatement, I certainly applaud the administration for going ahead and taking another look at it. And because at least in my area, where issues like law enforcement, where you're going to be holding people, is vitally important. In fact, yes, the last time we had public safety up here, one of the concerns that I have is that if you have no place to hold somebody, there may be a law enforcement official or officer who may decide not to go ahead and act on his better judgment of holding somebody and instead leave that person because of factors like no place to hold them, the weather, and those kind of things. And so I'm certainly glad that the administration saw fit to go ahead and reinstate some of the funding that went there. The question that I have, though, is do you have a distribution of where these communities are that are going to be essentially reinstated to partial payment?
So I've looked at a list and have had discussions with the corrections, and there are a couple of different options that they'll walk through in the subcommittee process.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
And that, so the decisions haven't been made specifically as to which communities are going to be reinstated at partial or full funding?
Right. And what we've asked is to look at the usage, the current usage of the jails, and then also it's acted a lot like a municipal revenue sharing in some ways. And so also understanding that you can't go from 100 to zero immediately. And so having some consideration for that, the impact in a single year.
I think that, I tend to disagree with you. I don't think we look at it as an element of community of the revenue sharing. I think it's an issue that, at least in Kotzebue, where the people of Kotzebue themselves are being harnessed with something that's more of a region-wide, the Quebec area, as far as people that are going to be incarcerated, and they're bearing the brunt of the, they're bearing all the cost if the state has nothing to do. And that's my only comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Go ahead, Pat.
Okay. Lines 5 and 6 are together. This is an accounting item to help the Post-Secondary Education Commission have a clearer view of their receipts, but it's just shifting, so it's intra-agency receipts to have a full picture of one component. But it's really just an accounting mechanism. Okay. The next item, I'm on page 7, page 2 of 4. I'm on line 7, page 2 of 4. The first budget, the endorsed budget of the Walker administration, there were reductions due to the cost shift of medical or Medicaid expansion. This $20 million is a reduction due to Medicaid reform. So this is an additional reduction on Medicaid reform that is both associated with the current Medicaid population and the expanded Medicaid population.
Pat, can you, so the expanded population, can you provide us, I don't think you'd be able to do that today, I don't think anyway, maybe you can, the amount of that $20 million that's for the current population and for the expanded population, and the savings came specifically from what population? I understand you're moving people to tribal health. What mechanism has caused them now to shift over to tribal health, whereas it wasn't there before?
So the mechanism is actually the requirement of a waiver. So it's still a discussion with CMS, but it's one that's fairly probable. There's the other to the degree that you can have a closer interaction with individuals, you can move them to a particular facility that would be 100%, that they are 100% eligible if they go to the IHS facility. Right. So those doesn't require a waiver. Some of the other shifts will require a waiver that is in progress right now. So, but we can get more information on that.
Yeah, and do you know if any of this is anticipating the shift to the Alaska Native Medical Center patient housing? And I don't think you knew that, because we talked about that before, but just want to get on the record, and if you could get back to this committee if these savings include that, because we kind of already did the math on that 2 years ago when SB 88 was passed, and that hospital wing has not yet been completed. It won't be, I don't think, until this fall. I could be wrong on that even. It might be next fall. So anyway, if you could just kind of dissect that a little bit and provide the information to my office.
Appreciate for clarification, this was the housing?
Yeah, it's, excuse me?
Assisted living.
It wasn't exactly assisted living. No, that it was... It was tribal housing at the Alaska Native Medical Center, and that was from SB 88, and we had a COP on that. We anticipated the shift of medical expenses to pay for the lease back. And so anyway, if you could provide me and Senator Michicki, he's the co-chair, or no, the subcommittee chair for Health and Social Services.
Absolutely.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy and then Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, it's a 30,000-foot question, but it's important. The governor had made Medicaid expansion part of his campaign. In speaking with the administration and the governor back in December, some of us, I certainly did, expressed the opinion that we need to be convinced that this is a good thing. The question I have is I still don't have any more, I guess, knowledge as to what this is going to look like. I really don't understand what the vision is going to be in terms of where it's coming from the administration. So the question I have is the governor putting a bill together? Is he going to file a bill on Medicaid expansion so that there can be hearings so we can understand what he's looking at? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the co-chairs actually came and talked to the governor about a bill, and he's considering it. We haven't gotten a final answer.
Okay. Just on the record, something this large, this complex, I think needs to have a number of hearings for some of us, I mean myself, to really understand where he wants to go before we can make a decision. If it's just going to be, we're just going to put it in the budget and do it, it's going to be very difficult for myself, and I don't know, I'm not speaking for others, but to be able to support that. Just want to keep that on the record.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ms. Bibby. Oh, Senator McKinnon, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Ms. Pitney, I remember the conversation a little bit differently. Alaska issued $35,000 on a bond, and I thought it was for payment on a level in a hospital facility at Alaska Native Health Consortium. And the idea was that the state would be able to see repayment over time in the cost savings that are proposed here. And so if we could get clarity on whether it was actually housing or whether it was the neonatal center that is actually referred to here, because the backup that I thought that I heard on the record by the former commissioner was this particular cost shifting would pay back the state for actually forward funding in the form of a bond, money that we're already paying. So it seems to me we might be spending the same money twice. There may be a little bit more money available to the state under this particular proposal, but it absolutely is a movement that the past administration was moving towards on trying to utilize those cost savings. But as I recall, it was for we bonded for an entire floor on a facility to provide neonatal help to try to create these savings.
Neonatal health was part of that, but it was a general Medicaid. It anticipated Medicaid money from more than just the neonatal portion of it, but neonatal was one of the great selling points because that is so expensive and they almost always have to come in to Anchorage from a number of villages. I think we're talking about the same conversation, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, you may be right. My only point here is that we are already anticipating the debt service to be paid for on that current investment with a portion that is now being shown to us as cost savings to expend more money to support a program that, I don't know, math always, for me, one and one is two, not...
Oh, no, and I just wanted to make sure because you said you thought you remembered the conversation differently, and I think we remember it exactly the same. And I don't know if that confuses you. I think we're asking the same question for the same information. If you could provide it to Senator Machicki and Senator McKinnon and myself, that'd be fine. Or anyone who wants it, obviously, just give it to the committee. We'll distribute it. Yeah. Go ahead.
So line number 8 and 9 are both related to the aerospace move to more self-reliance. The general funding of $4 million was reduced. They asked that if it be replaced with receipt authority for aerospace receipts versus having they believe they can earn more revenue, but they need the authority to do that. So this is taking the reduction that was made in general fund and replacing it with aerospace receipts.
Just for the record, I think, Ms. Pitney, that the board and the executive director might have spoken a little differently on that as far as 100% federal receipts versus maybe half or something like that. So that'll be a further discussion, but I just wanted to also get that. Let the committee be aware that we had testimony at this committee that the executive director said that they would would welcome just the federal receipts, and the board said, maybe not. We might need the $2 million of the $4 million GF. We may still need $2 million of that.
And based on the clarification we had, they received it all in aerospace receipts. So if it, yeah, it may need some.
Okay.
Some adjustments.
Okay, go ahead.
So items 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 are all combined. So, and this is because the ferry schedules come out in October and people have bought tickets, there was a desire for a one-time restoration of the ferry services for this year using a one-time reduction in the road service area or the highway funds from the different regions to restore the ferry service for one time. And this is viewed as change the schedule in the next fiscal year, which happens in October.
Senator Machicki.
Try to think of the most polite way to say that. It could be viewed as changing it in the next fiscal year. It could also be viewed as a classic case of kicking the can down the road and making us look like the bad guy. This is in my subcommittee, and this is an example of the tough choices we're going to have to make. So pulling it out of highways, putting it back into Marine Highway on a year this tough, I'm willing to be the bad guy. I guess that's why we get the big bucks. I just want to make that clear that this is probably not the way that I'm going to want to go in the subcommittee.
Senator Dunleavy, and then Senator Dunleavy, and then Senator McKinnon.
For the chair, two questions. One is, what services are going to be reduced from the road system, which is basically my district, is the Glen, the Richardson, and Parks? What's going to be reduced by moving this money? And how diligently are we looking at the fact, once again, that with the decrease in oil prices, we certainly lose revenue, but costs and fuel are also decreasing? And has that been looked at with the ferry system or other aspects of state government, that if there is a significant savings in fuel now, can't that savings be transferred over to deal with the schedule issue as opposed to taking off of the road system monies to keep these schedules in place?
Mm-hmm. Through this chair, Senator Dunleavy, if you recall, there was $27 million in the fuel trigger mechanism in fiscal year 15. Work in Progress had that fuel trigger mechanism at $20 million. The first endorsed budget eliminated all the fuel trigger mechanism. Department of Transportation was the primary recipient of that fuel trigger funding, and so they lost all of the fuel. Any savings they would receive, they've also lost the revenue associated with paying that. In addition, they've taken additional cuts similar to other agencies. So the money that was paying for those high fuel prices was eliminated first.
Follow up, Senator Dunleavy?
No, it's okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat, could you get back to the co-chair of the operating budget? How many tickets have been purchased or sold already, and then what the cost would be to send out a new fee schedule? I can't believe that we're sold out already, and these numbers appear to be a sold-out scenario. And so I certainly would not want to go back and tell someone that has already purchased a ticket that they have to pay more. But for those who haven't purchased tickets, I'm not sure what the disadvantage is of raising our fares and notifying each individual that's contacting the Marine Highway for a ticket that the price is higher.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm now down on lines 15 and 16, page 304. So the university has several contracts. This particular contract with the University of Alaska Federation of Teachers, UAFT, was finalized here in the last, between the endorsed budget and today. And so the request, the salary adjustment required under that contract would be $1.5 million, of which 50% is on general fund. Line 16, unfortunately, was tied directly to that. We have a target in the administration's mind for each operating budget for the agencies, and that line 16 should read, reduce the general fund amount to meet the administration's target for the University of Alaska, not tied to this contract. But the reality is a net increase of designated general funds of 754 between these two.
Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair. When school districts negotiate contracts and they settle contracts or agree to contracts, they pay for that out of their operating budget that we've given them. Why does this not happen with the university? We give the university money to run their entity, and then when there's contracts negotiated, they come back to us to ask for the money. Why isn't it done the same way with school districts, where they negotiate the contracts, they settle their contracts, and they pay for their contracts out of the operating budget money that we give them? Why is it different?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the university's contracts are treated more similarly to a state agency. So the contracts come to the legislature for approval and for funding. If the legislature approves the contract and appropriates the funding, the university is obligated to pay that. If the legislature does not approve the contract or explicitly does not approve the funding for the contract, the university cannot pay that contract. And that is similar to all the other state agencies.
I'm sure I'm confused. They negotiate a contract. They settle, let's say it's 2%. I thought I heard two things. I thought what happens, the current practice is they come back to the legislature to appropriate the 2% to pay for the contract. But I thought I also heard you say that if they settle, the university pays for it. Do that one more time, please. Okay. School districts pay for their contracts out of their operating money. They don't come back to the legislature and say, we've settled for 2%, we're asking for 2% additional from the legislature.
Through this chair, Senator Dunleavy, the school districts are not required to run their contracts through the legislature. The university and other state agencies are required to run their contracts through the legislature. I don't know what it would take to have the university act more like the school districts, but I'm sure there would be some statute or mechanism to make that happen. But there is a provision that says the amount appropriated in this bill covers the provisions of these negotiated contracts. And so the money that's put in covers those. That what it says is that state agencies and university, because we say the money appropriated here covers these contracts, that indeed any contract provisions are then funded. The legislature has the provision of not having that language not there and having the intent that salaries are not funded. Unlike for K-12, where the community does the contracts and approves the contracts, absent any oversight of the legislature.
I appreciate that. We just briefly, we're the essentially we're in the assembly for the unorganized boroughs in the state of Alaska, the REAAs. They still negotiate their contracts at the local level and pay for it out of their operating monies. But it's something, I think it's something for us to think about and look at. Thanks.
We'll take a brief at ease. For the members, Mr. Armstrong has just distributed the sponsor statement on SB 88, which should give some clarity to the discussion we were having regarding shifting Medicaid funds from the state to the feds based on the COP that we passed in 2013. Ms. Pitney, were you at 17?
I was.
Okay. Before we get into this, the questions we'll have on number 17 are going to put you into a much larger policy discussion. This is very unusual to get this kind of authority, so I would anticipate that you're going to get some pushback on this, and this is going to require a lot more discussion before we would approve it. So it's got a big red flag on it for me, because we just don't generally haven't done this before. So if you want to discuss it further, go ahead.
So Chair Kelly, we do realize that this is unusual. And it, we've looked at other states. There, it's not. Is it a common practice? No, not all states have it, but several states do have a provision to allow for distributions within departments and distributions across departments. So, in this unusual year, well, I wish I could say it was a year. In this unusual fiscal time that could last.
Season.
It's way longer than a season. Multiple years that I think we're facing. This provides a degree of flexibility and prioritization within the legislature. And I think if you would ask legislative finance right now, they would say that it is, you know, outside the bounds of law or even constitution. I believe if there's an agreement and it's approved by the legislature, it has a boundary, that there is a provision for it. We know this is highly unusual, and it is a request for flexibility, understanding the fiscal decisions. And the timing of those decisions are going to be very difficult because of the size of the reductions that we're facing.
Pat, you and I have been in plenty of discussions about flexibility, and my desire is to give you flexibility, but it's probably going to be within BRUs. And could somebody give me the right word for BRUs? I'm showing my how dated I am. What do we call them now?
Budget request units, RDUs.
RDUs? Okay, RDUs. Well, my preference would be to give you flexibility within the BRUs, more flexibility, and maybe combining some BRUs. But just so that we're clear, when I'm talking about flexibility, and I don't mean this disparagingly at all, but when you take a specific amount and attach flexibility, it becomes like a slush fund. And that's why all the red flags go off, and there, it may have constitutional problems and statutory problems. So I support your need for, and I think we need to have further discussions about flexibility. I'm not sure this mechanism is anything that we're going to be comfortable with, but maybe. We have time to go. So,
line number 18 is contingency language for the SPAR fund. So, kind of separately, we're working with folks, with this group, on what is a long-term solution for the spill response fund. And I don't remember the number. Was it 407?
407,
yeah. But anyway, the spill prevention and response fund. So while we're figuring out the longer-term solution, if that doesn't get done this session, this covers through 16 with contingency language. We anticipate a settlement coming through that would make the fund solvent. If that settlement does not come through, this is contingency language that would be filled with general fund.
And this particular one, is it ANIAC?
Yes.
Yeah. Senator McKinney, you look like you had a question. Was that quick? No. Senator Machicki?
We are working with several on a solution. It's interesting. I guess the request I could make is to we're in I don't believe in the term fiscal cliff, but we're in more difficult times than we're accustomed to in the last few years, and state departments seem to want to do business as usual, as opposed to looking for creative ways to solve problems within the law. And my only request is, you know, it's like line 17, which in my view is a process shortcut that I don't support. In the meantime, I would appreciate if you could sort of help by encouraging state departments to be more creative on working through some of these things. And the SPAR fund is one of those solutions. I think we have a solution that works, but when you get through revenue and the other departments, they want to put a fiscal note that, in my view, is resistant to solving the problem. So I'll be working with you and the others to see if we can sort of iron that out. I think there are other ways to collect the funds. I don't think it's a bill the state should be paying. We've talked about that. And maybe we can get folks to sort of look at things a little bit differently, a little bit more creatively, keeping the costs down and solving these problems without putting obstacles in the way. And I don't know a more clear way to say that. I don't want it to sound ominous, because it's not. I think they're used to doing things a certain way, but these are special times that sometimes require special solutions.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Ms. Biggie.
So on line numbers 19 and 20, these are just the latest information on the earnings projections, and so the adjustments from the Alaska Permanent Fund into the earnings reserve. So they're just updating based on, you know, we project once, and then each time we come in to keep the end result as close as we can to the most up-to-date projection. These are just adjusting those projections. Yeah. Okay, so we're done with operating. Okay. Any final questions on operating before we start on supplementals?
Let's just take a... Welcome back. We're now going to shift to the supplemental. And again, it's just an overview. We're not going to take it up as a working document or anything like that. Ms. Pitney.
Thank you. So,
did you have a question?
When we took a break, Mr. Sherman, I said I would ask it when we came back from the break.
Oh, you have a question that's still pending. I thought you, oh, go ahead.
Just very briefly. There's been talk of trying to reduce government by 25%. How does this budget and this budget approach get us there over a certain period of time?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, this budget reduces by roughly 6% the operating agencies, agency operating budgets. So over the course of a four-year time frame, with that gets the first step in a 25% reduction. It is a first step, and as the pressure builds, the solutions will become more dramatic, and the choices will become harder. This is an introduction to how hard the first step is. And this first step, at 6% of the agency operating budgets, it's asking for a lot of services to be interrupted, to be changed. So it is only a first step until we take larger steps next year. And so the time frame is, do you want to go to a 25? And the 25% challenge isn't to say we're going to have a 25%, that every agency is going to be 25% less. I mean that would be saying.
Matt, can I interrupt just for a second? Apparently the bells rang. I didn't hear them. And so we can probably get through this supplemental if you could. Senator Dunleavy, are you satisfied with that? Okay. Let's go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. So line four is a request for emergency repairs for the State Forest Road System in the Tananaw Valley State Forest. Last year there was, this was a request that's come forward on multiple occasions, and the need became very much more apparent recently, and that's why it didn't show up in the previous versions of the supplementals, and why it's showing up here. The request is for an $896,000 emergency road repair base because of the rain. The revenue from that forest is about $250,000 a year. The repairs are required to keep that revenue flowing. It's a trade-off. The revenue goes into a forest receipt fund and is part of the Department of Natural Resources overall operating budget, but it also has tremendous community impact for access to timber and wood. So the next one is judgments and claims. Number nine is a reappropriation of two projects, one that will not be done because they had an alternative funding source. That's the Harbor Program. And the second one is the Glen Highway Ruts. This particular project is going to be complete, plus there's going to be additional federal funds put into that project. So what the reappropriations do is allow the Department of Transportation to put their injection wells in, and this is where you used to drop the oil down through the grate in a garage. That's no longer approved by EPA, and you have to have these wells to make sure that you're disposing of your waste appropriately, and so this will avoid a future fine. Items 10 and 11 are airport repairs fund source changes. So they were on the construction fund and they were on the airport revenue fund. So they're net zero changes, but it's changing fund source for project completions. Actually, no, that's just on number 10. Number 11 is a reappropriation for the replacement of the Caslin Bay maintenance station. There was actually, in number 10, there was actually, that it impacted more than a couple of airports. So number 12 is just a straight repeal with the AGIA program finalized. There was $2.7 million remaining in those accounts, and that's just a strict repeal of that fund, those funds. And the next two, number 13 and 14, those are almost more to bring to your attention that last year there were appropriations made that exceeded the fund balance of the funds that they were made from. And if you replace replace funding in those funds, those items that were appropriated last year can be funded. If you don't replace the funds with general funds, those funds will run dry and there will be some hiccup in revenue for the projects already appropriated. So it's bringing that to your attention. A choice will have to be made to repeal projects if these transfers aren't made.
Any other questions? Senator Machicki, we got to go.
Very quick comment. Back to the operating budget, and although Senator Dunleavy may not agree on the terminology, I agree with him completely. It seems if we're uncomfortable with the impacts of rescheduling a few ferry reservations, we're never going to be comfortable with the types of cuts we need to make this budget work. And I strongly encourage that you remind the administration that when we get done, everyone's going to be uncomfortable, and they're going to have to become more resistant to that discomfort in order for us to succeed as a team.
Good point. Anything else? Hearing none, we are adjourned.